You are listening to an ADIS podcast.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the ADIS Rapid Plus podcast series. This podcast was supported by educational funding from Abbott Diabetes Care. Joining us today is Professor Sam Sadu from Leicester General Hospital. And today we will be discussing the topic of the use of continuous glucose monitoring in optimizing type 2 diabetes management with non-intensive insulin treatments in the primary care setting. So Sam, thank you so much for taking the time to join us on this podcast where we'll be talking about non-intensive insulin treatments and continuous glucose monitoring as crucial tools in achieving treatment goals in primary care. We will touch upon various things in this podcast, including randomized clinical trial evidence and real-world evidence, addressing the challenges and barriers, and adopting continuous glucose monitoring in the primary care setting. And finally, rounding off with some practical tips for interpreting the ambulatory glucose profile report. So to start off, let's set the scene a little, Sam. Why should one consider continuous glucose monitoring in type 2 diabetes?
Thank you very much, Harley. So CGM use in type 2 diabetes is actually very crucial in the sense that, like every type of diabetes, you will need some sort of monitoring. And as we shall see in more detail later on, monitoring actually requires some continuous assessment of the glucose profiles so that the patient will know what is happening daily and minute by minute on their system, and they can make changes as appropriate. So I think that is the main reason for considering continuous glucose monitoring in type 2 diabetes.
But we know that type 2 diabetes is largely asymptomatic, so why should one bother treating it?
It is extremely important to treat type 2 diabetes, Charlie, because the prevalence is so high globally. We're talking about over 500 million people across the world with the condition. And here in the UK, we have about 4.7 million people with a condition, and that takes about £10 billion, which is a tenth of the total NHS budget. About £8 billion of this £10 billion is spent on managing complications, and these complications normally work because of poor control. In people with type 2 diabetes, some data suggests that about 36% of patients do not achieve adequate control, and that results in complications. So when you talk about heart attacks, for example, some data have suggested that about 530 diabetes-related heart attacks are experienced in the UK per week. And for amputations, some data suggests that about 175 amputations are noted in the UK per week due to diabetes. About 20% of hospital beds are occupied by someone with diabetes at any particular time. And so there are huge implications for this. The problem is most patients with type 2 diabetes do not necessarily have intensive insulin treatment. And a lot of the guidelines until recently focused the use of continuous glucose monitoring on people who have multiple daily injections of insulin. But like I said, the vast majority of patients with type 2 diabetes are not in this category. The vast majority of patients will be on non-insulin treatment, or even if they are on insulin treatment, is non-intensive insulin treatment. And so focusing on using continuous glucose monitoring for only a small fraction of patients with type 2 diabetes like this will not avert the complications that I've outlined earlier on.
But there are, however, other diabetes monitoring options, aren't there? So what's the benefits then of continuous glucose monitoring over other diabetes monitoring options that are out there?
That's an important question, Charlie. The main one that we know of is the hemoglobin A1C. The hemoglobin A1C is actually a good predictor of long-term outcomes, both microvascular outcomes and macrovascular outcomes. What it doesn't do, however, is to address the day-to-day or minute-by-minute hypoglycemia and hyperglycemic excursions that you would find in a person with type 2 diabetes. You tend to miss that minute-by-minute variability. So it's pointless relying on that to determine if a patient is going to have a hypoglycemia or a hyperglycemia. Then comes the capillary blood glucose monitoring. So again, most patients who do this would be testing, pricking their fingers, capillary blood glucose levels, probably a few times a day. Most people would hardly do it more than a couple of times a day. And if they are very dedicated and do it properly, they might do it 7 to 8 times a day. What happens in between the testing periods, no one knows, especially at night when they are in bed. You could actually get hypoglycemia in those periods where you're not testing without actually realizing it. So that again has also got its own limitations. And also some patients are asked to keep a logbook and bring their readings to their healthcare professional so they can assess control of their diabetes, just looking at the profiles in their logbooks. Unfortunately, these logbooks are usually very difficult to interpret, and one cannot really be very sure whether what they write in the books are actually accurate, because sometimes they do that just to impress the healthcare professional, especially when it comes to concerns regarding driving licenses. They want to keep a good record that they do not have hypoglycemia so they can maintain their licenses. So those are the problems with the capillary blood glucose testing and hemoglobin A1C. And so that calls for a form of monitoring that records data continuously in a way that you can be able to see the minute-by-minute variations in glucose profiles in the patients. And that is where the continuous glucose monitoring is very useful.
Thank you very much, Sam. It's really great to hear of the advantages of continuous glucose monitoring and how it's useful. But what research evidence is out there to support the use of continuous glucose monitoring in people with type 2 diabetes?
So the research evidence in the use of continuous glucose monitoring people with type 2 diabetes is increasing pretty fast. A lot of people have always associated the use of continuous glucose monitoring in type 1 diabetes, but the data in type 2 is also increasing. The most recent one that I'm aware of is the immediate study, which is a randomized controlled trial that demonstrated that intermittently scanned continuous glucose monitoring in patients with type 2 diabetes on non-insulin treatment improved glycemic control. And this improvement was consistent across factors such as diabetes duration and medication count. And then also came the mobile study, which echoed similar findings, but in this case, in a population of patients who were on basal insulin treatment. And that also showed some improvement in A1Cs after the follow-up period, suggesting a behavioral change as a cause of the improvement. And the reason I say that is that in the mobile study, the baseline A1C in the patients who were on the continuous glucose monitoring was 9.1%. And at 8 months of follow-up, that dropped to 8.0%, whereas in the blood glucose monitoring group, the A1C dropped from 9% to 8.4%, and the difference was statistically significant. The interesting thing about the mobile study was that the intervention arm that had the continuous glucose monitoring was further split into two arms after the 8 months of follow-up. One arm stopped using the continuous glucose monitoring, and the other arm continued using the continuous glucose monitoring. The patients were then followed up for an extra 6 months, so a total of 14 months. And note that those patients who initially started a trial on blood glucose, capillary blood glucose monitoring, continued on that through the 14-month period. After the 8 months, during the follow-up to the 14 months, those patients who discontinued the continuous glucose monitoring saw their time in range drop from 62% to 50%. So that 12% drop was noted in the patients who stopped using the continuous glucose monitoring. And interestingly, the drop did not actually come all the way back down to the baseline of those who were originally on capillary blood glucose monitoring. And the question is, why did that not happen? And my assumption is that these patients who were initially given the continuous glucose monitoring learned some behavioral changes. And this learned behavior sort of carried through some legacy benefit during the remaining 6 months of follow-up. And so that is where I actually changed my practice by not just using continuous glucose monitoring continuously throughout, but even for short periods, you can actually argue that the patients can get good behavioral changes that would improve their glycemic control and CGM metrics going forward.
Thank you, Sam, for that overview of the research evidence. But what about the real-world evidence? Are the findings in RCTs similar to those from the real-world observational studies at all?
That's an interesting question. So again, the real-world evidence is gathering pace week by week and month by month. Every day you wake up, there is another publication somewhere in the world reporting real-world evidence. But Eugene Wright, team did some work recently looking at the use of CGM in the real world in a population of patients under the age of 65 who are poorly controlled A1Cs above 8%. And what they found was that at baseline, in a population of patients who were, I think there was about 1,034 patients, the A1C dropped during the follow-up from 10.1% to 8.6%. The interesting thing about this study was that the patients who were both on insulin and non-insulin treatment, in the group of patients who were on insulin, the drop in A1C only came from 10.1% to 9%. Yes, that was statistically significant, but a drop in the A1C in the patients who were not on insulin treatment dropped from 10.1% to 8.5%. So that drop in the non-insulin treated group was actually more significant than the insulin-treated group, which was interesting because until now, every time we talk about continuous glucose monitoring, people start thinking about insulin use and multiple daily injections, probably because of the association of insulin with hypoglycemia. But here we're seeing benefits even in the non-insulin treatment in the real-world setting. And so that opens up the question. I know this is a real-world study, it's an observational study, and there are a lot of bias and confounding factors that can be associated with the study. But it actually brings out another research question. Is there a case to actually consider the widespread use of continuous glucose monitoring in patients with type 2 diabetes who are not actually on insulin treatment? Probably not to avoid hypoglycemia, but to focus on the behavioral changes that I've talked about, things like medication adherence and all sorts. All those may come into play in improving glycemia when you're using continuous glucose monitoring in that population.
Thank you, Sam, for that overview of the evidence. But looking beyond glucose control now, are there any benefits of using continuous glucose monitoring in type 2 diabetes?
Yes, there are some benefits. Indeed, the acute benefits, the ones that we acute hospital admissions, we have a lot of data coming from various countries. In France, the RELIEF study now has got two-year data. So in the RELIEF study, what they did was they assessed the use of continuous glucose monitoring and looked at the reductions in hospitalizations for acute events in patients with type 1 and type 2 diabetes. And in the type 2 population, when you look at the annual proportion of patients with hospitalizations and you focus on the acute complications such as DKA, there was a drop from 1.7% in the year prior to the initiation of the continuous glucose monitoring to 0.8% by year one, and this was sustained to 0.9% by year two. You kind of found similar trends in the hypoglycemic events and coma and hyperglycemia. So yes, there are benefits. It's not just the glucose metrics and A1C that we've seen. There are some benefits with respect to acute hospitalizations for diabetes complications.
That's great. It's really nice to hear that there are additional benefits to continuous glucose monitoring use beyond just glucose control. It's also really important, though, to hear some advice for primary care healthcare professionals. Do you have any advice at all on this topic or any simple strategies for primary care to interpret the continuous glucose monitoring data at all?
Yes, the advice is just to basically re-emphasize the benefits of continuous glucose monitoring. Like I said, not just with respect to glucose metrics, but beyond that, acute complications. And indeed, I haven't even mentioned the quality of life measures. So I recently presented data at the ATDD showed that the use of continuous glucose monitoring, especially in the elderly population, led to improved satisfaction with treatment, convenience in the treatment, and flexibility, and so many other patient satisfaction measures. So those benefits have got to be sold to the healthcare professionals. But to emphasize the simplicity of interpreting continuous glucose monitoring, I think the consensus report published in Diabetes Care in 2019 actually makes it very, very simple for healthcare professionals to be able to interpret this data. The color coding is actually what I like very much. This actually makes it very, very simple. You have, for the vast majority of patients with type 1 and type 2 patients who are young, you aim for a timing range of 70% and above, and time above range of 25%. And time below range of less than 4%. And for hypoglycemia, looking for time below range of less than 1%. Of course, in the elderly population, you need to relax your targets a little bit. And so for the elderly population, time in range of more than 50% is acceptable, and time above range of more than 50% is acceptable as well. And time above range with a target of 39.9 millimoles per liter should be less than 10% in the elderly population. The sort of figures that you would use for pregnancy are different, and this podcast is not in the remit of the pregnancy. So it's actually very, very simple. Just focusing on the color codes for the time in range and time above range and time below range, you actually sell the simplicity of continuous glucose monitoring very well to the primary care professional.
Thank you, Sam. It's great to hear that you think it's quite simple, and the color coding actually helps make it simple as well. But as with everything, there are challenges that must be considered. What are some of the barriers for adopting continuous glucose monitoring in type 2 diabetes?
That's an interesting question. The barriers everywhere you go talking about this topic normally are cited as cost. Cost effectiveness of using continuous glucose monitoring in the type 2 population. As I said earlier on at the beginning of the podcast, the prevalence of the condition is very high. And so if you unleash the use of continuous glucose monitoring on a wide scale of patients with this condition, you're probably going to end up in a situation where health economies cannot afford it. So everywhere you go, people talk about the cost. So there have been some studies that have looked at the use of continuous glucose monitoring in the type 2 population, looking at cost-effectiveness data. I think the initial focus on the intensive insulin therapy and people with type 2 diabetes and multiple daily injections of insulin were compared with capillary blood glucose monitoring based on a lifetime horizon assumed to be 40 years. And that showed some cost effectiveness with respect to using continuous glucose monitoring. Another single study also included cost due to productivity loss. And the use of intermittently scanned continuous glucose monitoring improved the quality adjusted life years for people with type 2 diabetes on intensive treatment, leading to a favorable incremental cost effectiveness ratio. In the basal insulin therapy population, again, there have been studies, an analysis focused on patients with type 2 diabetes, not on prandial insulin, but just with intermittent use of continuous glucose monitoring in four cycles of using the continuous glucose monitoring for 2 weeks, and then come off it for another week and repeat a cycle up to four times over a 12-week period. That was followed up by another 40 weeks of observation and comparing with a control arm of patients using capillary glucose monitoring. In this study, the cost inputs included the direct medical costs and also included treatments for depression, for diabetes complications, and life expectancy and quality adjusted life expectancy outcomes for the continuous glucose monitoring cohort were all improved. And again, in this study, there were gains in the ISA and the colleagues. And this study actually indicates that the intervention was cost effective, and that effectiveness most likely, as I said earlier on, due to patients making informed behavioral choices without the clinician guidance. So that is patients who were on basal insulin. In the primary care setting, recently published a randomized study, a 6-month prospective study in the US was conducted using continuous glucose monitoring, which was compared to capillary testing for participants receiving usual care in the primary care clinics. The vast majority of these patients, that is about 93 out of a total of 99 patients, and this is typical of the population you see in the primary care, 93 of them had type 2 diabetes. And these patients were selected without any consideration on the dietary or oral medications or even injectable therapy regimes. After 6 months, the continuous glucose monitoring users had reduced costs overall for primary care visits, emergency department attendance, and laboratory investigations. And the savings were not universal or dependent on health insurance provider in the US. So we're getting drip by drip evidence mounting in support of some cost effectiveness when it comes to selecting the appropriate cohorts of patients in the type 2 population for getting continuous glucose monitoring. The other barrier has been the issue around technology adoption and the challenges. But again, I think that is overplayed. The vast majority of patients globally, even in the elderly population in most countries, are now tech savvy, they use smartphones. And so that is not usually an issue. Even in situations where you have patients who are incapable of having their own monitors, you can provide monitors from the various makers of the continuous glucose monitoring for these patients. And it also helps with healthcare professionals accessing this data in their facilities to advise the patients better.
Thank you, Sam. But if wide-scale use isn't feasible, are there any special groups of patients with type 2 diabetes that continuous glucose monitoring could be considered?
Yes, that's interesting. Yeah, I would probably say, over here in the UK, the focus is on hypoglycemia. So the categories of patients that we meant to use in type 2 population include patients with recurrent hypoglycemias, hypoglycemia unawareness, patients who need carers in to go and help with their testing, and patients who are testing more than 8 times a day. You know, those are some of the cohorts that you want to use continuous glucose monitoring in the type 2 population. But even beyond that, I will dare challenge the system and suggest that because of this behavioral change that can be seen in the initial use of CGM, probably even at diagnosis, you can consider the use of continuous glucose monitoring for a short period only so that the patient will see what the changes in their lifestyle habits is having on their glucose metrics on the CGM. And then after that, you can take it away from there. You could also consider using this when you are changing doses of medications or de-prescribing medications when there could be acute glycemic excursions during this period. You want to see exactly what happens during those periods. And also in some cases when there are diabetes complications, for example, dialysis and gastroparesis, or patients with diabetic foot ulcers, and so on and so forth. Other instances can be when you think those patients with their A1C results are not matching their finger testing numbers that you see. You might want to see, look at the continuous glucose monitoring and see what exactly is going on there.
And what about practical tips? Do you perhaps have any practical tips that you could share with us in interpreting the ambulatory glucose report for the primary care healthcare professional who is new to continuous glucose monitoring?
Yes. Practical tips for interpreting it actually are useful in the primary care setting because the numbers can be a bit daunting, but it's best to just break it into 5 single steps. The first step is basically just validate the data, make sure that the numbers you're looking at are all accurate and they belong to the patient who you think they should belong to. Look at the patient's name and the date of birth and make sure, you know, it's the right patient. And then look at the data. Make sure you got a good 10 to 14 days worth of data, depending on which continuous glucose monitoring you are using. You should aim to get readings more than 70% of the time to be able to rely on the data. Then you want to look at the GMI and then the glucose variability target, which should be less than 36%. And then after that, you can look at your timing range, time below range, and time above range. And then after that, you can then talk to your patient. The step 2, when you start talking to your patient, the first thing you want to do is to look at the AGP report and look for hypoglycemia. You look at the times that they are getting hypoglycemia and investigate the cause of this hypoglycemia. It could be related to medication, the times of medication dosing, or their meal times, fasting, alcohol intake, or exercises, and see how these tie in with the hypoglycemic episodes. And then after that, the next step will be to look at the hyperglycemic episodes. And in the type 2 population, you'll find that most of the abnormalities you see on the AGP report would usually be in the hyperglycemic range. Not that hypoglycemia is not important, actually very important, but the vast majority of patients with type 2 diabetes are more likely to have problems with hyperglycemia rather than hypoglycemia. So when you get to the hyperglycemia, you want to again look at the relationship with food intake, medication, insulin dosing, lifestyle and behavioral changes. And then you can adjust therapy based on that in your discussions with the patient. You also want to look at the glucose variability. Just make sure that the variation in the profiles are not very acute. What you want is to have a flat, narrow, and in-range sort of profile. You don't want one that is undulating too much outside of the recommended ranges. And then finally, when you have done that, you need to agree an action plan with this patient. So when agreeing with the action plan with the patient, having already reviewed your AGP report, you know where the abnormalities are. There may be a few abnormalities that you have picked up. Try not to do too much at a time. Just pick the most urgent ones first. Make sure that the discussions are smart, specific, measurable, achievable, and time-bound. And then review the patient at a set time and then see whether the targets that you agree with the patient have been met. Once they have been met, you can then take the next problem that you identified in the AGP report and address that. So that is the way to do it. And if you do it that way, you will find that actually that systematic approach makes it very easy for patients to follow.
Thank you, Sam, for those practical tips, which I'm sure will be very helpful for the primary care healthcare professional who is also new to continuous glucose monitoring. Just to round off this podcast now, do you have any final concluding remarks?
Yes, my concluding remarks will be that primary care providers need to familiarize themselves with this new technology. 30 years ago, the way we monitored glucose was using urine tests. And now most people would monitor glucose using capillary testing. So I think we're now entering an era where even the capillary testing is going to become obsolete in the next few years. So it's worth primary care clinicians familiarizing themselves with this new technology and how to utilize it in patient to benefit management of their condition. A shared decision making with a patient can be set and appropriate action plans agree with the patient, especially focusing on avoiding hypoglycemia, but not just that. In the type 2 population, also focusing on avoiding hyperglycemia and glycemic variability, which tend to cause a lot of the long-term complications that we see in this population.
That's great. Thank you very much, Sam, for your final thoughts. It's great to hear your overview of the benefits of continuous glucose monitoring in type 2 diabetes management. I look forward to seeing more consideration of continuous glucose monitoring as an integral part of treatment plans. It's been a very interesting topic today, and thank you so much, Sam, for your time and for being here today. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
You are listening to an ADIS podcast. You can listen to more podcasts by subscribing to ADIS Podcast with your preferred podcast provider or by visiting the journal website. For a full list of declarations, including funding and author disclosure statements, please read the article on the journal website.